for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 582 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Matt D. Wilson from Imposter Syndicate on Zoop.gg is my guest this week. His crowdfunding project will wrap up soon, so be sure to support him. It's described this way. What happens when a supervillain dies on the job or just gets too old for this and retires? Well, somebody's got to step up and put on the mask. And actors have to work, don't they? We discuss who the characters are, how this book came to be, and what we can expect from him in the future. Be sure to listen to this fun interview and back his great book today. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Matt D. Wilson, the creator of a fascinating book called Imposter Syndicate. And it's going on Zoop.gg right now. And how you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good. How are you, Wayne?
Good to talk with you. Why don't I just, so people know what we're talking about here, I'll read, there's like a two-paragraph introduction that's on the Zoop.gg page. And I think it gives a lot of information that'll be helpful as far as understanding the story. So let me do that real quick. It's a down on his luck actor, an impossible to pass up opportunity in a world where superheroes and supervillains are real and also the biggest business in the world. We're talking movies, TV shows, toys, video games, even Broadway. Shadowy employers have ample reason to keep them fighting no matter what, which sounds a little close to reality here. So what happens when a supervillain dies on the job or just gets too old for this and retires? Well, somebody's got to step up and put on the mask. And actors have to work, don't they? Especially if they're slumming around doing kids' birthday parties and there are enough zeros in the check. This series is literally 20 years in the making, so your help can bring it finally bring it to life. So you've been working on this for 20 years, Matt?
In bits and starts, yeah. I had this idea for this type of superhero comic in 2003, and I know for a fact that it was 2003 because this story originated as a pitch to Marvel's Epic line. Hmm. Do you remember the relaunch of Epic in 2003?
I do. It was something that was really interesting because Marvel, the original Epic line was really great, and then all of a sudden it faded away, and now everybody was trying to get the Epic going up again, and I think it was a great idea.
Yeah, so the original Epic was like non-Comics Code Authority comics and graphic novels and stuff like that, like stuff that wouldn't fly under the regular Marvel banner, right? Kind of like Vertigo before Vertigo.
Right.
But the relaunch of Epic, as described in the final issue of Marvel, which the final issue of Marvel was just an announcement that Epic was going to happen. Mm-hmm. It was essentially anybody can pitch a story to Marvel. We're going to take pitches from everyone who wants to pitch us. And so I was, 20 years old at the time, 19 years old at the time. And I thought, I could do that. I could pitch a story to Marvel and get it through and it get published and everything would go great. So I came up with this idea of a supervillain dies and there's this shadowy organization that it hires people to replace supervillains after they die or get injured or retire, so that those supervillains never go away. Somebody always fills that role of that supervillain. So, the engine can keep running. Supervillains and superheroes can keep fighting forever.
Right.
And initially it had like, you know, Green Goblin and Spider-Man and all of these. I'm a particular lover of like third string Marvel supervillains. One of my favorite single issues of all time is the Spectacular Spider-Man issue about the Legion of Losers, which has like the Gibbon and White Rabbit and Spot and the Grizzly all in it. And so the villain that got off, that the lead character here got offered to be initially, was the Gibbon from Marvel. But Marvel, you know, told me no. I think they only eventually published like 3 or 4 epic books. Mm-hmm. Like there was a Crimson Dynamo book and a couple of other things, but it never really went much of anywhere ultimately. But after they rejected my epic pitch, I reworked it into an indie comic where the superhero and supervillain characters are kind of like parody characters in the vein of The Tick or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while to do that, to like get to the point where I was satisfied with kind of my own character creations to fit into the book. And then I started the lengthy process of trying to find an artist to draw it for me. And I was, you know, in my 20s and didn't have any money. I couldn't pay artists to draw pages. And there was no Kickstarter or Zoop at the time. So, you know, it was hard to get it off the ground or get it made. And then in later years, I was working on other projects. I was writing the books, the Supervillain Handbook and the Supervillain Field Manual and Supreme Villainy. I was writing other comics. I was podcasting. I was writing for, you know, Comics Alliance and places online, and also just like living my life. So it sort of occurred to me 2 years ago, I guess it would have been like 2021. I had this project that I had been working on that just sort of fell through and ended. And this idea for Imposter Syndicate had been sitting in the back of my head for that whole time. And it's the book that I've never been able to get out of my head. You know, it's that idea that never went away. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately I just kind of said, okay, now's the time. Now's the time that we got to do this. And I had worked with the artist that I'm working with on it, Rodrigo Vargas, on another comics project a couple years ago that came out in 2020 called Everything Will Be Okay. And so I asked him if he wanted to work on this project, and he said, yeah. And I have means to fund it now. So I'm finally trying to get this thing that I've been working for half my life off the ground. And that's the full 20 year story of getting this comic made.
Wow. It's interesting because you bring up a point. The first thing I thought of when you were talking about villains replacing villains was that Jeff Johns, I think, wrote a book about 3 Jokers.
Yeah.
But there actually wasn't 1 Joker. There were 3 of them. And I was, of course, that was news to me. I was really 3 Jokers. I never heard of that. So that's interesting. So if you're landing somewhere near Jeff Johns, that's not a bad place to be, in my opinion. So that's pretty good. So now how far are you on the project right now? How far are things going?
The Zoop is for the first 2 issues, which we're going to package together in, you know, a nice kind of trade paperback, sort of soft cover. So that's all scripted. Rodrigo has done the art for a handful of pages, and we have a colorist lined up that we're going to work with. But ultimately, you know, the whole reason I'm doing a Zoop project is I still, even now, can't really pay out of pocket for a reasonable page rate for an artist of Rodrigo Vargas's caliber.
Right.
So we're going to collect the money on Zoop, or do our best to collect the money on Zoop to make sure that Rodrigo gets paid. And then he'll finish the art. We'll get the art colored and lettered, and then it'll be done from there. So it'll be a little time after funding to get this done. This isn't one of those projects where, you know, someone has the writing and art completed and all that needs to be done is printing. But I've done Zoop projects in this, or crowdfunding projects in this fashion before, where, you know, I get the crowdfunding funds, the sort of pre-sales, as it were, and then pay the artists finish the art, and then we print it off and ship it out. And so I think it should go pretty smoothly. I feel like it will go pretty smoothly all in all. But yeah, the scripting part, my portion is done completely. So we're just going to make sure our artists get paid, because artists should get paid.
Very true. That is very true. But the odd part to me is always the writer / creator doesn't often get paid.
Yeah.
You're the person coming up with the concept, and the very important part is paying the art people, maybe the artist and the colorist and letterers and things like that. But you as the writer / creator, you get the satisfaction of seeing it hit the get done, and actually hopefully some comic company will pick it up and start to get it out to the public and stuff. But is there any, I probably shouldn't be asking this, but is there any allowance for you to make a little money out of Zoop, or is this going to be basically focused on paying the art?
I guess if we do really, really, really well, I could pocket a little bit, but ultimately that's not why I'm doing it. You know, I think most creators, most writers that do a project like this are kind of doing it for the love of the game and aren't especially in it as a money-making operation. I could do almost literally anything else to make more money than I would making comics. For me, it's a matter of, I've had this idea since 2003. It will not leave my head, and I have to almost exercise it from my brain. You know, I have to get it out and put it out there, sink or swim, you know. The hope is always that the project gets out into the world and gets done and people take notice, and, you know, maybe a publisher picks it up and we make more issues with a publisher behind it. And, you know, ultimately, you know, sometimes on the back end, you do make money as a writer if you have books you're taking to conventions and selling from a table or something like that. But that's kind of not ever at the forefront of my mind. It's because I'm sort of the creative, I had the creative idea behind it, or I'm the origin of the idea. I'm most interested in just bringing that idea to life however I can. And, you know, like it or not, when it comes to comics writing versus comics art, however you want to debate who is more responsible for the what's on the page, which I think it's a pretty equal partnership in that regard. But in terms of time, actual time, the artist is putting in way more labor in that regard. So in some ways, you know, my view is that they're more deserving of some upfront money. And you know, I'm taking all the risk because I'm not just the writer, but I'm kind of the editor. I'm kind of the, you know, Zoop helps with a lot of these things, but with previous crowdfunding projects, it's been, I'm the writer, the editor, the shipping clerk, the warehouse that where the books are stored. I'm customer service. I'm everything. You know, Zoop is great in that it handles some of that stuff for me, but it's, you know, it's like I said, it's the love of the game.
Yep. You reminded me a while back, I was part of a group that was writing scripts for what we thought was a Star Trek fan film series. And the ship, of course, if you know anything about Star Trek, the ship had no aliens on it. And for the life of me, I could not think of how a starship would have no aliens. And so I set about coming up with a story as to why there were no aliens on it. And I had the whole script in my head. I had a friend of mine who was a script writer, and the two of us would work through that and come up with the stuff. And, you know, of course, the middle part's always the hardest. And I was terrified of getting the voices correct, you know, getting the sounds. And I never forget, we got to the very end and we wrote the last part out. And I had this weird sensation of like a rush that went over me, that this thing that had lived in my head for a year was now on paper and it didn't live in my head anymore. And I was so weird. I mean, I still look at it every once in a while and I go, man, I can't believe this was all bouncing around in my head. So I was just sort of curious. Did you have that kind of result when you got done writing the scripts for the episode or the issues? Did that happen to you, or you probably so used to writing in comics and stuff like that, that didn't happen?
I think there's always a moment. There's always like a moment when you finish a script, or really anytime you finish a step in the creative process, you have a story breakthrough, or you actually finish a script, or the book gets published and is out on a shelf, where you have that moment of, wow, that's cool. I feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And at least in my case, that moment lasts about 5 minutes.
Okay.
And then as soon as those 5 minutes are over, where you can feel that fulfillment and feel that sense of accomplishment and that you've done something, there's, I feel like this is something almost all creative people have, where there's that voice that says, okay, what now? Mm-hmm. Or in the case of, you know, if you do a crowdfunding project, you have that celebratory moment where it's like, we got funded. We did it. This is going to be real. Where you say, okay, well, now we have to do it, and then you start scrambling, you know, to get everything done, so that the people who were kind enough to pay you for your work get what they paid for, and it's a perpetual motion machine, man. You just have to get your little victories where you can.
Well, and as a creator, of course, you want to create. And so yeah, you keep creating is how you handle this stuff. That never got made, by the way. We had the script, but nobody ever did it. So it's just a script for me right now. So you're ahead of me. You've actually got pages that you can see. So that's great. I'm glad for you. Why don't we dive into the book a little bit and see if we can talk about who the various characters are.
Okay.
Who's the main character? I saw some sample pages, and I saw a guy who is, I think he's going to end up being one of the main characters, dark-haired fella. Is he the main character?
I think you're talking about John, mm-hmm. John Weston is his name.
Okay.
And what you'll discover, when the book exists, is he was that down on his luck actor that you mentioned earlier. And when we meet him, he is working with another coworker at children's birthday parties, wearing a supervillain costume. And specifically, he's wearing the costume of a supervillain called the Orange Ogre. And he, it's, you know, it's a shoddy costume. He pretends to fly into the kid's yard and, you know, threatens the party. And then his coworker, who's dressed as a superhero, you know, rushes in, pretends to beat him up, and leaves him, you know, laying while all the kids at the party cheer. And he makes no money doing it, virtually no money at all. He gets talked down to by the parents at the kids' parties. And he used to do a lot more. He used to, you know, do these Broadway shows and things with the superhero characters in them. Mm-hmm. And this is how far he's fallen. So he gets a call from his agent about a big opportunity. And that's when he meets this shadowy figure who was in some of the preview pages, mm-hmm. who makes him an offer and says, you could take over this role as an actual supervillain. Here's the costume. You just got to sign on the dotted line and you're in. This is your job now. The guy who did have this job doesn't have this job anymore for reasons that I won't disclose.
Okay.
But you can take this job on. It pays well. And you know, John has a bunch of questions like, what if I get arrested? What if, you know, don't these superheroes like really punch? Won't it hurt? What, you know, what kind of protections can you offer me? And the guy has an answer for everything. So he signs on. And what the series is going to be is following John as he goes on this journey of having been hired to be a supervillain. You know, the first issue is he takes the job. The second issue is he goes to training camp and he meets a bunch of new trainees who also have been hired on to do supervillain stuff. And some former superheroes are going to train them to do this job. So that's the idea. It's this mix of kind of real life portrayal of superheroes and supervillains that we see all the time now in a world where superheroes and supervillains actually exist, and it all kind of intermingles.
Okay. I'm kind of curious that I guess the superhero was a guy with like a sort of a purple and magenta outfit with yellow gloves. Mm-hmm. Is that the superhero?
Yeah, that's Webshot, okay. Who is our kind of spider themed superhero, who swings around and shoots webs out of his feet. So, you know, some of the characters are pretty, it's not hard to tell who they're supposed to be analogs for. But there are other characters who are not analogs for anybody. In the second issue, there's going to be a lot of kind of new ideas for characters. One that I revealed on social media, so I think I can reveal it here, is this character named Fortune's Favor, mm-hmm. who failed at being a superhero because she has luck powers. So anytime she goes anywhere, she's so lucky, crime doesn't happen there. So she can't stop any crimes because she's never around crime. She's too lucky to be around it.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's interesting. So she'll be in the second issue, you said.
She's in the second issue. Yeah, she's one of the trainers who trained the new group of supervillain trainees.
now. In the first issue, I see some of the pages, like I said, and I see the guy, and he's got a costume that he's talking to the guy while he's holding it in his hands. Is it too soon to talk about who that costume is, or who the character is in that costume?
So were you talking about the guy in like the trench coat and hat?
No, the it's like a monkey costume.
Yeah. Okay. So that's John holding the costume. Mm-hmm. And the villain he's been offered to be is the bonobo, which is like a, you know, third string C-list low level supervillain who is just a guy in a ape costume who sort of stomps around and does low level street crimes. So, you know, much like in the Marvel Universe or DC Universe, they're the kind of low level grunts among the supervillains who do, you know, the most basic street crime and don't really have any kind of sophisticated powers. And then they're the really, really high level people too. And if I'm lucky enough to be able to continue the series and dig further into it, it'll definitely get into that hierarchy of, you know, the high level villains and the low level guys.
There's a wonderful page, I think it's page number 18, in which John is looking out the window and you're seeing conflict between a guy with a bluish outfit on who bursts into flame, and he's fighting, looks like an Australian type guy, and he's got an alligator with him.
Yeah.
And talking about heroes and villains being real, he sees this out right outside of his window. And so he sees the two of them going, and he gets the Australian guy gets punched, and the hat hits the wall. And then the next thing that happens as he's looking at the contract, so the alligator hits the window, thud it goes, and that made me smile, because there he is thinking about being a villain, and right outside his window is possible things that may want to change his mind about that. So it's a very nicely, smartly done page. I really got a kick out of that.
I appreciate that. Rodrigo Vargas, the artist on this, added so much of that detail. Like the alligators, or I guess it's meant to be a crocodile, since the Australian guy is Dr. Didgeridoo. The crocodile is not in the script at all. It just says in the script that he's Dr. Didgeridoo, an Australian themed supervillain. And Rodrigo added the crocodile and everything, and I saw that page and it just cracked me up. That he put in that little funny detail. Like, Rodrigo is great about getting what I'm going for. Not just with this book, but with everything that we've worked on together. But with this book in particular, he's like adding in little jokes in the art and adding in funny stuff, because he gets what it's supposed to be. And I love that. But yeah. The Australian guy is Dr. Didgeridoo, who attacks superheroes with his didgeridoo musical instrument. And the superhero is this guy, Blastoff, who's like a speedster who actually, yeah, sets a flame. So yeah, there's a couple of moments in that first issue, not just in the preview pages, but earlier in the story, where there's just superhero and supervillain fights going on, you know, out the window all the time.
Right. It's kind of like if my brother used to always say that if Marvel Comics were real, the city of New York would have had to have been rebuilt like 5 times. In order to get, and that's what this kind of reminds me of, is that he's looking out and they're out in the street and there's cars and everything all over the place, and the two of them are busting the fighting and the damage hits, and the guy's living his real life inside there. That's the funny part about all this, is that,
yeah, I mean,
thinking about it, so fun.
Some of my favorite comics are the ones that don't necessarily put superheroes in quote unquote the real world, mm-hmm. as it were, but that imagine what the world where superheroes live would be like and what sorts of institutions and groups and economies would emerge out of superheroes existing. Like, you know, damage control is one of the best examples.
I just thought of that same thing. That was what I was thinking about. So so this is very much like that. If what kind of business or support would need to happen if there really were superheroes and villains?
Yeah. I mean, like, I love damage control for having that idea. There's a bunch of issues at Astro City that get into that. You know, there's been other comics about like superheroes as a business, like the One Star Squadron book mm-hmm. DC had for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I love those kinds of comics and those kinds of ideas. So, I think this falls into that category of like, you know, who would be like kind of managing superheroes and supervillains behind the scenes or like making sure that they don't die out or stop fighting over time. Mm-hmm. I've always loved that kind of peeling back the layers of the onion a little bit in superhero comics.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of funny. And, you know, I always tell people that I always thought with the X-Men, if you were mutants, you wouldn't look like teen models. You would, you know, you'd have an arm growing out of your forehead or stuff, especially if radiation was what made you a mutant stuff. And yet they're all good looking except for like a Nightcrawler or the Beast. And those are the only ones. Everybody else looks like beautiful people. And I'm always like, wouldn't be. So to me, I'm going to kind of, it's the only thing I worry about is this poor guy. We're going to feel sympathy for him and he's going to get the tar beat out of him. Time and again. So I have to see whether that's what happens to this poor guy, you know, because I don't know if anybody wants to sign up for a job that's going to get you wishing you hadn't signed up for it. I guess the best way to think about that. Are we going to deal with that? Is that something we're going to deal with?
I think you can be pretty assured that it will. One thing that I find that I do a lot in my creative work is explore my fears. And like my last comic with Rodrigo, which I mentioned, it was called Everything Will Be Okay. It was all about, you know, what if every disaster that could ever happen happened? And, you know, that was me getting out my kind of like existential fear about that sort of thing. This book is more about my existential fear as a person who wants to do creative work, who I've seen enough episodes of Behind the Music or, you know, documentaries about people who went bankrupt after making a ton of money to know that you can sign one bad contract or make one bad decision or hire one bad manager and all that success you had is gone. You know, everything right. You thought you were getting into is something totally different. And so, you know, we're going to see whether John regrets having signed that contract or whether he's shocked to know, you know, who ultimately employs them. Cause to me, that's the big question of the whole book that will hopefully be answered someday if we get to an issue 12 or so, you know, just who hired him to do this, who wants to keep this happening and who has the deep pockets to make sure it does. So yeah, those are all questions. Those are all things I have in mind and definitely want to explore.
I used to love to watch Behind the Music. And that's where I saw that Billy Joel, he had all these all this money, and every time he hires a new manager, the manager strips him of his money, and he's got to go back on tour because now he has no money again. And one of my favorite ones of those was Weird Al Yankovic was on there, and he sits down with the guy, and the guy says, "I don't know what we're going to talk about for an hour." He says, "I didn't have a bad manager. I don't have anybody stealing my money." He says, and then they talked about the one album he came out where it was not what he expected. His income wasn't. He says, "Oh," he said, "yeah, I had to get silver things in my bathroom instead of gold." He said, "It was a real heartbreaker." And those kind of things always make me laugh. I have to, like with you, I just found that was hysterical, you know. But it'll be funny to see how this all works out, because I can tell already I feel sympathy for John, and I have a when he gets in and he's in the costume and he's fighting the folks, I'll be torn as to who's going to win and stuff like that, and who's going to. What is he going to be able to get money, or what's going to happen to him? So we'll see what happens with him.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated by kind of the mindset of supervillains in general, because it's not like, you know, in the story they know they're going to lose,
mm-hmm.
but some of these superheroes and supervillains have been around for long enough. You have to have a feeling that, you know, the win-loss percentage is so skewed against supervillains.
Right.
But they just keep coming back. They just keep trying. They have this ineffable, unstoppable persistence mm-hmm. that they always have in the face of almost certain defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of baked into this book, that they just know they're going to lose, and it's all part of the deal.
There was a story that Mark Waid wrote when he was writing Fantastic Four, that Dr. Doom had been trying to beat Reed Richards with science for so long, and yep. Reed kept beating him, and that all of a sudden he decided, "Hey, my mother was a witch, and why don't I try and use magic against Reed Richards for a change?" And at first, Reed Richards is just like baffled. "What do I do? What do I do? I don't know how to deal with magic and stuff like that. Doesn't make any sense to me." And I thought that was a very smart move on Dr. Doom's part to actually, you know, go after Reed Richards in a format that Reed was not familiar with. I thought, boy, that was really brilliant. It ends up, of course, and I don't want to spoil the whole story, but let's just say that Reed figures out the pattern in magic that he needs to understand in order to beat Dr. Doom. But I found that was a creative storyline. I'd never seen that before. So that was
I love that story. That's the same story where Dr. Doom sends Franklin and Valeria to hell.
Yeah. Yeah. Yikes. But that was smart, you know? I mean, yeah. How many decades has Dr. Doom been getting the tar beat out? I mean, he's been thrown out of airplanes and all this other stuff, and we never know how he survives, but it was nice to see something a little different. And I guess your story is going to be something along those lines, something that we don't read often in comics, but we probably should.
That's the hope, is that it's kind of something new. 'Cause, you know, superhero tropes are pretty well worn by this point. I think we all know how a typical superhero story goes. We all have a pretty good idea of who's going to lose, who's going to win, what the evil plan is going to be. Like, not to say that there's nothing new that could be done in superhero comics, because I see new ideas and cool stories now all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I read a ton of comics and see a bunch of stuff that I'm like, "That's a cool new idea. That's a cool new idea." Like I hadn't seen anything like Lazarus Planet until there was Lazarus Planet, you know?
Right. But, right. Granted. Yep.
But, you know, from the idea of kind of like trying to crack the idea of superheroes and supervillains open and say, what's really going on here? Who stands to gain? What, you know, might be going on behind the scenes or in the kind of broader world that these characters exist in, that these people exist in. When I had the idea 20 years ago, I thought it was something new. And luckily, I haven't seen anything do this exact thing since then. I've seen other stories kind of like push up against the idea or do something sort of similar or look at superheroes as kind of like business people or something like that. But I haven't seen this exact idea before. So that's only made me kind of more eager to get it out there.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be fun. It's going to be an enjoyable read because I'm with you. I've been reading Long John comics for decades, and I always like it when something varies, even if it'll move the needle a little bit in a different direction. I always like that. So I'm looking forward to this book. I think it's going to be great fun. It's on zoop.gg, and again, it's Imposter Syndicate. And it's going to be fun to be sure to get in there. And it's, as we haven't talked about yet, but it looks like this is going to conclude somewhere mid-April. So Be sure to look at the zoop.gg page for that to find out more things as to what's going on with that. But Matt, are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
Well, I have ongoing things that I'm doing all the time. I have my own podcasts that folks can go check out if they want to. War Rocket Ajax is going on all the time. I do a show called Movie Fighters where Chris Sims and I watch a movie and make fun of it. It's a very original idea. I do a podcast with comics artist Erica Henderson, who I'm sure people listening to this know, and comics writer Benito Serino, where we watch the TV show Chucky and talk about every episode, or in the off season, we watch movies and talk about the horror movies. And that show is called Friends Till the End. So people can go check out all those podcasts on their various podcasting apps and things. Okay, I'm doing those all the time.
Okay, well, great. Sounds like fun. Now, the as far as like social media, if people want to follow you, like to know what you're up to when you're not necessarily working on an Imposter Syndicate, where do they do go for that?
You can follow me on Twitter at @TheMattDWilson. And with the uncertainty about the stability of Twitter, I've also been a little more active lately on Mastodon, where I'm at just mastodon.social/@MattDWilson. That's where all my stuff is. You will see on all my social media accounts that I note that I am not the colorist, because I am not the colorist, Matthew Wilson. We are two different people.
Aha. That's the problem having a quote unquote common name.
That's right.
Everybody is them with that. Well, you know, Matt, I wish you much success. I think this is going to be great fun to read. I think it's going to be very successful. And we're looking forward to seeing this come to fruition and get it out. You said that after the campaign ends, it's going to be a little bit before the book will be ready to ship out to people.
There'll be a little time to finish the art and then we'll need a little time to get it printed and shipped, but hopefully it will not be too long. I know Rodrigo is eager to draw these pages, and we've hired a really good colorist to work with us too. So it may be, you know, a few months, but I'm very hopeful that it will be in people's hands in short order.
Well, it's going to look like fun, and I good things are worth waiting for. So if it takes a little while, I'll be happy to see this when it's all completed and ready to go. Again, it's at zoop.gg, Imposter Syndicate, and it's going to conclude about mid-April, but do not wait until then. Now is the time to go and back it so that Matt here doesn't have those crowdfunding blues where people sit there and refresh and refresh and refresh, and then the total doesn't change when you're refreshing and stuff like that. That drives people in crowdfunding absolutely crazy. So we want to save that for Matt and try to get this as complete as quickly as possible. So great fun talking with you, Matt, and good luck with Imposter Syndicate and with other good things.
Thank you, Wayne. This has been a blast.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when we'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. You hacked League systems, disobeyed protocol, and endangered your lives. And your initiative resulted in the capture of 3 escaped felons, proving Warden Strange runs Bell Rev as a cover for criminal activity. Well done.